This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We got a rate cut. Isn't that exciting? Kara Watha joined us to talk about that. Marsha Blackburn, someone tried to kill her and the FBI investigated her. We'll talk about that. We'll talk shutdown stuff. Communists are insane. All that and more coming up on I'm Right.
But we must remember, in a time such as this, we are not the crazy ones, New York City. We are not the outlandish ones, New York City. They want us to think we are crazy. We are sane.
Well, what's that old saying? If you have to say it. I don't think the party that thinks dudes can become women if they chop their penises off can really lay much of a claim to be the sane party. They are insane. We felt the need to have a talk tonight. There's a couple things that have popped up recently. A talk we've had before about Democrats in the United States of America. It's not just the AOCs and Mamdanis and Bernie Sanderses of the world. Democrats in the United States of America. If we hung out, you and me, say we go to Red Lobster together, and I sat down and I told you to your face that I believed if I held my breath, I could turn invisible. When I hold my breath, my body just disappears and nobody can see me. What would you think about me? Would you think that I was sane or I was insane? Of course, you'd think I was insane. Why? Now, why? Why would you use that word to describe me, insane? Because I believe something that's not true. An easily verifiable thing that's not true. It's just not true, and yet I'm so brainwashed I've chosen to believe it. Democrats are insane now. A lot of this is because of the university system that has broken their brains, the media that breaks their brains, Democrat politicians who break their brains. The reason the Democrat in your life, the liberal Aunt Peggy in your life, whether she's in your home or maybe you work with her or whoever it may be, mom, dad, brother, son, the reason they're so angry, the reason they constantly spew things that are just simply not true at all is because they have been bludgeoned with lies. They live in a world of lies, and now they've lost their freaking minds. No different than me holding my breath telling you that I'm now invisible. This is how it works. Why are these people so angry, so miserable, taking it to the streets? No King's rallies. Well, because the system has told them for years they're up against Hitler.
Donald Trump is America's Hitler.
Yeah. A unified Reich? That's Hitler's language. That's not America's. He cares about holding on to power. I care about you.
Donald Trump is acting like a Nazi, talking like a Nazi, and now posting like a Nazi.
And by the way, out there, that hat that you keep wearing, that red hat that says Make America Great Again, that tells people that you go along with this. So you might as well just put a swastika on the hat.
Adolf Hitler was interviewed. And I'm quoting from his article where he was interviewed. He said, "Therefore, I say America is for Americans." Stephen Miller took the stage on Sunday evening, and he said, "America is for Americans." He is parroting the exact words of Adolf Hitler.
Those words have had an effect, and the effect has been devastating for the United States of America, because now it's not that we have just Republicans and Democrats. We have sane people and insane people. The insane people have been brainwashed and bludgeoned by lie after lie after lie after lie. Now they're all anxiety-ridden, angry, bitter. It's why they're turning violent, because they've been told it's Hitler, Hitler, Hitler. It's part of the reason we have this government shutdown going on. We'll ask Senator Marsha Blackburn about that in a few minutes, but why would you shut down the government? What's the whole point? It's not even getting you popular. The polls are not looking good for Democrats. Why would you shut down the government? Well, you've told Democrat voters that you're fighting against Hitler, and now Democrat voters demand that you fight as if you're fighting against Hitler. No, shut the government down. And they know, Democrats know, smart, sane Democrats, if there are any, politicians, they understand that it has really put them in a bind, And you're starting to see every now and then one will pop up in attempt to turn the volume down just a little bit on it. Here was J.B. Pritzker.
I haven't suggested that Donald Trump is Hitler. I wouldn't say
I don't think any Democrat has. I think it's a smear that they project back on to critics. But I J.D. Vance called Donald Trump cultural heroin. He called him America's Hitler. Yeah. I mean, the attacks on Donald Trump as a fascist came from three generals who worked for him. I mean, the most brutal critiques have come from people that have seen him far more closely than you or I combined.
Well, no Democrat has. But this is what I'm talking about, the world of make-believe. You just 2 minutes ago watched a video. We could have made that video an hour of Democrat after Democrat after Democrat lying. Hitler, Hitler, Nazi, Hitler, Nazi, Hitler. And then when it puts them in a bind, then they try to turn the volume down a little. Well, we've never done that. No one will do that. But this world of make-believe, they lie like they breathe. They have created a fake world in the mind of the average Democrat voter who believes Donald Trump is the spawn of Satan. And now they all try to run against him. It's all they can do. Because it doesn't matter if you're running for dog catcher as a Democrat, state representative, governor, mayor, House, Senate, president of the United States of America, your followers have been so brainwashed. Democrat voters have been so brainwashed to believe that Donald Trump is the sum of all fears that they all run against him exclusively now, and it's going to put them in another bind. When 2028 comes around, Donald Trump won't be there. He's just not going to be there. So what do you do if you're a Democrat? Well, what they're doing now, Gavin Newsom's been doing it all over the country, is, again, you just play pretend. You just make it up. Oh, he's running again.
If you have a Speaker Johnson, we may have a third term of President Trump. I really believe that.
He doesn't really believe that. He knows that's ridiculous. But you know what else he knows? Poll numbers. He has them sitting right in front of him. You know what every single poll shows? Every single poll of Democrat voters when they poll Democrats. You know their number one issue for Democrats? It's not the cost of living, border, taxes, or abortion, any of the other things you think. You know the number one thing Democrats care about the most? Fighting Donald Trump. So programmed, so brainwashed for all these years, it's all they care about now. So if you're Gavin Newsom and you want to be president of the United States of America, you can't run on issues. Shoot, you can't even run against J.D. Vance or whoever the nominee may be. All the voters care about, all Democrat voters care about, is fighting Donald Trump. So you now, you've built such a world of lies, you have no choice but to keep it going. He's running again. We get to vote for me. We'll stop Trump. I'll be the one who stops Trump. It's all they can do. Lie about everything all the time. Now, before we move on, talk to Senator Marsha Blackburn. I want to touch on something. Bill Gates. Bill Gates is an anti-human. Has been for a very long time. You've seen, I don't know how many pieces of video on this show of Bill Gates talking about reducing the population, getting the population down, of course, all in the interest of climate change. Bill Gates trying to change his tune now. Here he was.
Climate is a super important problem. There's enough innovation here to avoid super bad outcomes. We have to frame it in terms of overall human welfare, not just everything should be solely for climate. If you think climate is the only problem and it's apocalyptic, or if you think climate's not a problem at all, my memo will make no sense to you. You'll be like, oh no, it should all be climate, or you'll be like, why are you even still talking about this climate thing? Why do you invest billions of your money into these companies? The middle position that climate is super important, but has to be considered in terms of overall human welfare, I didn't pick that position because it's a, you know, everybody agrees with it. It's, I think, intellectually the right answer.
Let me explain something. Bill Gates is still an anti-human. Bill Gates has invested all that money into it. because the idea that man is changing the climate has made him a fortune. And Bill Gates hasn't changed his beliefs at all. But you know what he also knows? Republicans currently are in charge of the government. Republicans will probably remain in charge of the government. If he wants to remain in the good graces of the U.S. government, getting all those grants and permissions and things like that billionaires need, he can't wage war on prosperity. So instead, he tries to backtrack it. I don't trust Bill Gates as far as I can throw him, and neither should you. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We're going to talk to Senator Marsha Blackburn. The FBI tracked her phone, even her location, and it went deeper than her. This is a really big deal. We'll talk to her about that in a moment. Before we talk to her, do you know one of the ways the FBI got information on Senator Marsha Blackburn? Did you know this? Maybe you already read it. Verizon gave it to them. FBI illegally went to Verizon and said, hey, got her stuff, phone numbers, and who she's calling. You got her stuff? You know what Verizon said? Oh, yes, sir. Here you go. Do you have Verizon? You have AT&T? You have T-Mobile? These are horrible companies. Pure Talk would never do that to you. Pure Talk is led by a Vietnam veteran. They hire Americans. Pure Talk is as red, white, and blue as it gets, and they would never do that to you. Switch your cell phone. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. This Arctic frost thing, I shouldn't say it's a big deal. It is. It's the biggest deal in the world, but is it big enough? Meaning, are people going to be going to prison for this? Because they have to. We can't have a secret police agency operating like this inside the country. Joining me now, somebody who was most definitely targeted by this whole thing, great senator from the state of Tennessee, Senator Marsha Blackburn. Senator, you were one of the people in the crosshairs of the Federal Bureau of Investigation for the dastardly crime of talking to Donald Trump. Could you break this down for us in more detail? What happened?
You got it, Jesse, I will. And as you say, it is a big deal. And it's bigger than Watergate. And it's far more expensive than Watergate. And as we go through this, I think the American people are going to see it. We're actually going to do a press conference this afternoon. Here is what we do know. Jack Smith was named special counsel after a memo was written by Chris Wray, then the director of the FBI, saying, we think there could possibly have been some kind of conversation between some conservative members and President Donald Trump, and it all centers around the 2020 election. So what we want to do is do some investigating to see if there could possibly, maybe might have been, some kind of activity. So they, on April 4th of 22, you have this memo written by Chris Wray, and the next day, Lisa Monaco, the deputy attorney general at the time, to Merrick Garland, the attorney general, Lisa Monaco says, I'm signing off on this, you should too, and Merrick Garland signs off. So then Jack Smith is appointed as the special counsel, and he starts his fishing expedition. And what they did was to spy on 8 U.S. senators. The commonality there is we're all Republicans who support President Trump and had valid questions about the 2020 election. It was a total fishing expedition. There is no predicate for them doing this. They went to a judge. They got a subpoena. They go to our wireless carriers. Now, AT&T moved to quash, and they challenged the subpoena, and Jack Smith's people backed down. Verizon, my carrier, did not, and therefore they turned over the records of every call I either made or received, who the call was from, the duration of the phone, the call, the number of the phone and the physical location where I was standing when I either made or received that phone call. It is an invasion and a violation of my First Amendment and Fourth Amendment rights, the speech and debate clause, the separation of powers, and also the Stored Communication Act.
Senator, obviously we want to live in a country where everybody's treated equally under the law and whatnot, but also I'm understanding that you have a bit more of an important job than I do. To do this to a United States senator, it's so brazen. This has to be criminal, right? And I don't want to sound naive because I understand you said a judge signed off on it, but we are supposed to live in a system where this kind of thing can't happen, even if you have a scumbag in charge of the FBI or Lisa Monaco doing the things Lisa Monaco's always done. There should be laws that stop this. Why weren't there?
That stop this. And it is a violation. And yes, it is criminal. And that is why my colleagues and I have written to the current AG, Pam Bondi, and have asked for a referral of Jack Smith to the Office of Professional Conduct at the DOJ. It is also why Kash Patel didn't waste any time. He fired every single one of these staff attorneys and staff members that were part of that CR 15 unit that worked with Jack Smith. And it's also why I've written the DC bar with a letter of complaint about Jack Smith. He should be disbarred. And he should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, along with every member of his team that carried this out. And we know that they have also spied on over 100 conservative organizations. And here's the thing. If they're going to do this to 8 sitting U.S. senators, and it is unlawful to do this, then what are they going to do to conservatives all across this country that do not share their opinion? Or if you have some FBI field office that has somebody in it that doesn't like a member of a somebody in their community or a member of their church or the family of somebody that's in elected office, think about the power that they have to just really wreck people's lives. We need one tier of justice. Lady Justice is blindfolded. It should be equal access, equal treatment, equal justice. And the Democrats carried out weaponization of the DOJ and the FBI. They carried it out against us. And we are going to get to the bottom of it so we end this. No one, no Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green Party, whatever, no one should be subject to this kind of treatment.
What about Christopher Wray? You can't use the Federal Bureau of Investigation as your little plaything to help Democrats out and attack Republicans. That is, honestly, that is a crime. In my opinion, that is worse than murder. That is maybe the worst crime in the United States you can commit because of the power that comes with the position. When does Christopher Wray go behind bars?
Well, and he is someone that we will bring forward in our hearings. And we've got a meeting as to how we at Judiciary Committee are going to move forward on this, if we're going to compel people or end up subpoenaing people to come before us and have them under oath. But the fact that he's the one that wrote the memo that got Arctic Frost started, he wrote the memo. And the language in it, and it is on my social media, Marsha Blackburn, and it's also on our blackburn.senate.gov website. People can pull it up. They can look at it and read and just see how nebulous a lot of this language is and how wide-ranging. He wrote it so that you could scoop up people and then go scrape information and try to get a subpoena and get their phone records, and then try to track everybody they were talking to and how long they were on the phone with that individual. And if they call person A and talk to them, then did they call person B, and then did they call person A back, or did they bring in person C? And then, I mean, and where I was physically located. And was I at home? This is just one of those things you say, how could something have been this invasive and this intrusive? And they think they're going to get by with it. And you know what? Had Kamala Harris won the election, we would never know how weaponized the Department of Justice and the FBI was, not only under Joe Biden, but under Barack Obama.
Senator, shifting gears away from this, did someone try to kill you?
Well, yes. We have someone who has is on house arrest at this point, and that really is about all I can say about it because it's gone to a grand jury.
Okay. All right. Then I'm not going to ask you to ruin that whole thing. Let's shift gears to this shutdown. I don't see how it ends. The Democrats know it has to end, but their base is going to freak out on them if they end the freaking thing. It seems like they're stuck.
Chuck Schumer had planned this shutdown for months. That's why it's the Schumer shutdown. Basically, the Democrats decided to go on strike and close down the federal government. It's like they're filibustering, moving forward on appropriations bills, even though they're saying they're shutting down the government because they want to get some things done on health care. Well, as you know, Jesse, you can't talk about what is going to be covered by federal appropriations unless you are working on the appropriations bills. So they shut down the government because they say they want to work on healthcare, but you can't do it because the government is shut down. So the whole thing is ridiculous. And now we're up against the deadline with SNAP benefits. They run out on Saturday, November 1st. People are going to swipe those EBT cards and there will be nothing there. So in Tennessee, we've been talking to a lot of the food banks and elected officials and people that are involved. Churches are doing food drives for some of the food banks. And we know that people are stepping up to fill the gap. We've got about 700,000 families across the state that are receiving their SNAP and WIC benefits.
Senator, thank you as always, ma'am. Stay safe out there. You know what you need? Your belly needs some colostrum. Do you know why you need some cowboy colostrum in your life? It's make your belly feel better. That's what it does for me. I was told about colostrum. I didn't even know what it was this last summer. I was told about it by my sister. You got to try colostrum. Got to try colostrum. Why? I didn't want to hear it. Said, oh, you're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe how much better you feel, how much better your stomach feels, your digestive system works. I said, all right. So I asked around, what's the best colostrum? What's the cowboy colostrum? Everyone kept telling me. So I started putting a couple scoops in my coffee. I have the chocolate. They have vanilla and strawberry. You mix it in whatever. I put it in my coffee in the morning. Wow. What a difference. Go try it. Best I've ever, honestly, the best my stomach has felt in probably 10 years. Cowboy Colostrum.com. Use the code JesseTV. Save you a bunch of money. We'll be back.
Was the number one issue in the campaign the president's fitness or his age?
He often would confuse names.
You think it got worse as you knew him?
Yes.
We talked about age. We knew it was an issue, and we tried to design a strategy.
We had a discussion at the senior advisor level about whether the president should have a cognitive exam.
Were you ever told to lie about the president's health?
The advisory council, I must respectfully decline to answer based upon the physician-patient privilege and in reliance on my right under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
Let the record reflect that Dr. O'Connor has invoked the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. Dr. O'Connor, did you ever believe the president was unfit to execute his duties as president?
And we can tell you that he will have the same answer with respect to any questions that are asked.
did any unelected official or family member of President Joe Biden execute the duties of the presidency?
Did Joe Biden, a member of his family, or anyone at the White House ever instruct you to lie regarding his health?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer the question pursuant to my Fifth Amendment rights under the Constitution.
Okay, so they all lied, and we didn't have a functioning president for 4 years. Joining me now, Congressman Russell Fry from the wonderful state of South Carolina. Congressman, okay, so we didn't have a president for 4 years. They covered up, obviously, for him. Was it criminal? Because these sound like crimes against my country. This isn't supposed to be able to happen.
Well, to me, yeah. I mean, the people... installed, if you will, Joe Biden. He was presumably the president of the United States. And for 4 years, they hatched a plan to conceal his mental fragility. They were so meticulous about his public appearances, even casual gatherings with five people were done with teleprompters. They limited the amount of steps that he could do. You have a doctor in the White House that was politically connected to Joe Biden, who did not do a mental evaluation, who sat in on meetings with senior officials on how to handle the public outcry for President Biden to receive a mental evaluation and how to dance around it. And what has resulted in that is nobody seems to know who was running the show. You've got pardons that are being issued via auto pen based on a senior level White House official sitting at home and emailing a junior staffer at the White House who forwards it to the auto pen department, I guess. And so it really was a 4-year cover up of an American president.
I want to drill down as much as we can on the nobody knows who was in charge, because there's always somebody in charge, right? I mean, are we talking Ron Klain here? Anita Dunn, we can't seem to get her tentacles out of our government at any level. Who do we think was saying yay, nay? Was it possibly Jill? Someone had to be signing off, right?
Well, correct. And one of the witnesses of the 14 that were interviewed by the Oversight Committee have pled the fifth on the question, was it senior White House officials or members of the family? Did they ever perform any executive level functions? And so there's still a lot that we don't know. But again, somebody is calling the shots. And the damning thing about this, at least with the pardons, is the president under the Constitution has the authority. Nobody else has the authority to issue pardons, but the president does. You cannot delegate that authority. And even if you could, there is no affirmative stance or written statement by President Biden delegating that authority. You had what looks like junior level staffers and maybe even senior level rubber stamping pardons as they whisk through the White House. So there is some clarity. Obviously, senior White House officials were heavily involved in the cover up of Joe Biden's mental state and were running the country. But in my mind, my suspicion is, and it's probably confirmed as well, that you have family members and high ranking officials that stood to gain monetarily if he won the White House again, and who were absolutely engaged in executive level functions that the president was unable to perform.
Congressman, I don't like to give people false hope. I'm sure you don't as well. And I'm glad we're getting to the bottom of these things. But for the pardons, for instance, thousands and thousands of pardons. Everyone remembers how shocking it was. His own son. If it turns out, if we ever do get confirmation, which I'm doubtful of, that Joe Biden had no idea, he was drooling on himself, and it was this staffer who did it, can they be undone, or is this genie out of the lamp and ain't going back in?
Well, I think this is an interesting question, a legal question for the courts, and that's probably where a lot of this, I would imagine, would end up, is if the president did not, in fact, have the mental acuity to know who he was pardoning, or if a staffer issued the pardons, is it effective? Does it comply with the Constitution as it is written? And so I think that the courts are probably going to have to flesh this out. But even in the district that I represent, there were two murderers that were pardoned without any consultation to the family. They had no idea that it was even coming. And so we're seeing this play out in real time across the country, both in the hardened criminal cases like the ones in my district or even his own family. But the question is, What did he know and why did he know? And how much mental ability did he have to know who he was actually pardoning, at least in terms of members of his family? But some of these other crimes, obviously it looks like it was a total auto pen operation done by White House staff.
Ugh. All right, let's move on to Arctic Frost, because the House Judiciary continues to uncover more intel. And Congressman, look, not putting words in your mouth, when you look at the witch hunt of people on the right done by several FBI field offices, I'm sorry, it's very difficult to justify the continued existence of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This is beyond belief. People have to go to prison for this.
No, it's wild to me. This, we all remember Lois Lerner and the IRS and the scandal involving the IRS targeting conservative groups. Arctic Frost makes this look like child's play. I mean, this is absolutely one of the biggest fraudulent investigations targeting people based on their political beliefs. Turning Point USA was targeted. U.S. senators, members of the House of Representatives. This, in every which way, from what we can see right now, was a taxpayer-funded partisan witch hunt.
Congressman, let's talk about Liz Cheney and Benny Thompson and Jack Smith. There are allegations, I'll put it that way, out there, that they were colluding on all this nonsense. What do we know about this?
Well, at least from what we can tell, that seems to be true. Obviously, Liz Cheney was partisan in her investigation on the House. These things seem to be backed up. And then Jack Smith, of course, was handed the keys to the kingdom based on a referral, and he was appointed a special counsel to go after and target and use. Look, I mean, the wild thing about this isn't something that was uniquely him either. Senior members of the Justice Department, including Merrick Garland himself, had to sign off on the surveilling of U.S. senators and congressmen, because at this point it would be considered a high-profile case. So these senior executive branch officials, signed off on the surveillance of all these groups. And of course, we know from its very inception that it was partisan-driven. And that's the dangerous part of this. This is what we fought against in the last Congress, against the weaponization of our government. And now that we have, you know, Kash Patel and Pam Bondi and others in the White House and in these agencies, we're learning more troubling things every day. But this is not who our country is. And I think that's the challenge that we undertake as Republicans, is we sanction foreign countries for activities such as this. But you have a president in the White House, presumably in the White House, Joe Biden, who is allowing partisan investigations based on what people believe. This is not who we are in the United States of America.
Where are we at on the shutdown? I said yesterday, it seems like Democrats have the tigers by the ears on this. If Republicans won't cave like they usually do, but they don't appear to be caving now, Democrats are really stuck between a rock and a hard place. How's this end? When does it end?
When is a question of when does reality set in for the Democrats? Polling is not going well for them. The American people understand that when you vote no, that you're not voting to keep the government open. They've gaslit the American people on Biden's mental capacity, on the status of the border. They don't believe the Democrats, and they don't believe what they're saying. And this week you've had revelations, you know, the unions, the public employee union switch and say, pass a clean continuing resolution. Pay the people who are working as air traffic controllers or FBI agents or our border patrol. Pay them. Pay our military. We need them to be paid. So they flipped on the Democrats, and they just don't seem to be, they don't seem to be in sync with their messaging. They're all over the place. And even on legacy media, which is no friend of Republicans at all, they seem to be calling them out too. So I think they're losing in a lot of ways. The question is, when do they want to deal with this pain from their own base that doesn't want to work with President Trump in any fashion? But the reality is that, you know, there are people that are on SNAP. There are people who are serving our country in a variety of capacities, including the military, who will not get paid starting November 1st and even before. And that is a real problem for them when these phone calls start raining into their office. What's going to happen? I think eventually they fold.
Congressman, I appreciate you. Come back soon. The economy. We had some news today. Carol Roth will break it all down for us. Next. The Fed's cut interest rates, and that's really good because I really don't want you paying 7% for a house. Joining me now, the great Carol Roth, two times best-selling author, recovering investment banker. Hey, Carol, why they cut rates?
Well, I think they cut rates because they should have cut rates a long time ago when they were behind on doing so, and so now they're playing a little bit of catch-up. They did it in a way as to try to not spook everyone from the stock market to the consumers by doing a quarter of a percent or 25 basis points cut instead of the 50 basis points that was wanted by Trump appointee Stephen Miron. But I think that they've been playing catch up. They know that they have been too restrictive, and they also know that by lowering their interest rates, it was not going to unleash some crazy amount of inflation, given that we've been through 15 years of zero interest rate policy, and for the fact that we, AI that is messing with jobs and things like that. So I think that that's an important thing. The other thing that's important, Jesse, that is kind of in the weeds, is that they decided to stop as of December 1st the runoff of their balance sheet. So normally the securities that they've put on their balance sheet, when those have come to the end of their term, they would just let those expire. Now they're going to go back in the market and rebuy ones to replace those. So that is also considered more accommodative, looser policy, and is consistent with what we're seeing out of this cut.
Carol, I need you to break that down for dumb people. What does this mean? Runoff on the balance sheets? People like me who went to community college don't know what this means.
So you may have heard of the term QE that happened right after the Great Recession financial crisis. It happened during COVID. And this is policy of the Fed that is meant to be accommodative, to put more capital into the economy, to generate some growth, and to support it. It's considered to be accommodative or dovish. This is the opposite. Quantitative tightening is when they say, well, we had put all of these securities on our balance sheet. Now we're going to do the opposite, and we're going to tighten policy. And they have now said, okay, instead of us, tightening policy, we're now going to move back to a looser standpoint. So we're just now seeing a shift in terms of their policy back to things that are more accommodative, which is that signal that they are concerned, about probably the employment side of the mandate, that they're worried about what the employment situation may be like, and they don't want to be in a situation where the economy is sputtering and it's their fault.
Carol, talk to me about the affordability of homes. I it's not that I think everyone should own a home. That's not some people's lifestyle, but it would be nice if homes were as affordable as they were back in the day. Why aren't they? How do we get back to there?
Yeah, this is horrendous, Jesse, because, a home is the physical manifestation of the American dream. When we think about it, it's, the house with the white picket fence. And there's a reason for it, and that is the home across demographics is the largest asset on people's balance sheets. And the reason that's the case is that it's really hard to trade in and out of a house like it is a stock or other investments if things are going in one direction or the other. So it creates that discipline. You're almost forced to build equity in a home. And that's, really helped families throughout the country. However, over time, we have seen both government and Fed policy that has shifted things. In the past, you might have had a period where home prices were reasonable, but interest rates were high, or the opposite. In this particular case, we have situations where we were dealing with higher interest rates as well as higher housing costs, and that has put affordability out of reach, as well as ongoing maintenance costs and carrying costs, because even if you can afford to buy a house, you may not be able to afford the property taxes, you may not be able to afford insurance, you may not be able to afford other things that go into maintaining a house. So it's become a big issue. I think there are a number of policy changes that we can make. For young people, one of the things that is really hurting them is so many of them have this ridiculous college debt, five and six figures, that is, you know, put no return on investment back to them on their personal balance sheets. So getting the government, the largest predatory lender in the country, out of college lending and making the colleges right size, you know, their investments or their costs, so that we can get investment, because we're seeing a wholesale transfer of wealth from young people to college administrators. I think that we can also create incentives for things like building smaller homes, because if you look at the median size house in the 1950s, it was under 1,000 square feet, and now it's almost double that. So, you know, having incentives for builders to actually build something smaller, which is more of a pain in the behind for them, and, you know, they don't make as much up front, so we're going to need to incentivize that, could be a good thing. And then, of course, you know, we want to find a way to have people stop selling their homes to corporate buyers and selling them to individuals, particularly corporate buyers, that are going to take those homes out of inventory and rent you back the American dream. So there are a lot of different policies and things that we can do to change this. I think that, you know, this is changing in some parts of the country. You're seeing some shifts. And I think in, you know, maybe 15, 20, 25 years, you're going to see a change, probably because the boomers, you know, will give up their homes either on purpose or not on purpose. But for the time being, that doesn't help people who want to get into homes now. And that is something that we should be focused on, because we can't have the haves and the have-nots and, you know, not have the American dream available to young people and older people in this country.
Carol, you have a great article out in the Blaze called "Why Does the Administrative State Hate People Who Work for a Living?" So why do they?
I mean, that's the multi-trillion dollar question, isn't it, Jesse? The focus of this particular article, there are a lot of reasons why the administrative state hates working people and people who threaten their power, and they just want to wield their power over everything. But this was specifically in relation to the Corporate Transparency Act's Beneficial Ownership Information Rule, which you and I have been talking about for a while. Really great, the Trump administration, they are, you know, focused on small business owners, people who are creating the jobs in this economy, the backbone of the economy, and they came out with an interim rule that said, you know, this crazy financial crimes database that small businesses had to report to. If you were a U.S.-based business or U.S.-based individual, you no longer had to report. The problem is that was only an interim rule. So it means that any other administration could come in and change that if it wasn't codified by Congress. But Congress is not going to go ahead and codify it unless they get a final ruling. And the administrative state, you know, at Treasury, at FinCEN, they have asked for comments, and that comment period, I think, was done at the end of May. So there's no good reason for them to not come out with that final rule to allow Congress to actually, you know, formalize this and make it permanent. The other thing is that millions of small business owners already put their information into this database and are very concerned about what that's going to be used for, concerned about hacking, whether internally or externally. So they want their information purged. And again, by the administrative state blocking the finalization of this rule, you know, that is, again, impacting small businesses. So if we want this country to survive, we need the backbone of the country to be healthy, and this is a very easy thing they can do.
Carol, thank you, ma'am. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And just a year ago today, and we had a president that, instead of talking lovingly about America, got up and said this.
Or Puerto Rico, where I'm in my home state of Delaware, they're good, decent, honorable people. The only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters.
And I just want to remind you the circumstances around that. Dome was running for president, and they had Joe Biden tucked away in a closet. Hey, Joe, just don't say anything, because every time he spoke, he'd say something dumb that would hurt him. And the Biden administration, Joe Biden's family, started getting mad about it. Hey, you should let me out there. I'll be campaigning. I'll be really good. Let me out there. In his first interview, he goes out and calls half the country garbage. Anyway, Dome didn't win. It lightens my mood. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.